Okay. All right. Thank you so much for everyone for logging on. We're doing a training call today. It's called The Customer is Wrong. And we don't mean that in any offensive way. I should say I don't mean that in any offensive way. It was just a little bit of a marketing gimmick to get everyone on the call today. Just want to start off with a couple things before we get into all the bullet points. Going to try to keep this as quick as possible so we can get to a lot of questions. We have to keep this to an hour today. But what I meant of the title of the training, The Customer is Wrong, the first thing I just want to point out is what we do here, no one just sits and like studies mortgages and how they're done. It's not an exciting thing to do. It's not like trending on any social media, how do mortgages get done. So no one really sits down and studies that process unless you're in the business. Therefore, our number one job that we do here is we have to educate people every single day. And that's what all of us do here. I mean, especially the internal staff. That's what, you ladies and gentlemen are going to have to do too as you're working and talking to people that need loans, your borrowers. So I just want to point it out. That's what we do. We educate people every day. And because the mortgage process is a very complicated process, people don't really understand it from start to beginning. You happen to find yourselves in an industry where people jump to conclusions, they get angry quickly. Sometimes, not everyone, but sometimes they get confused quickly. They need you to do a lot of hand-holding with them because this is a process they don't understand. From your first real estate investor just doing their first fix and flip or first deal to someone that has hundreds of properties nationwide, but they don't typically borrow funds. They're not a new real estate investor. They're new to borrowing money, though, and it's a whole different process for them. So I want to just point out a couple other things. Our specialty here is we deal with lenders that are not banks. We do commercial slash investment property loans. So we do loans for 1 to 4 unit investment properties. They cannot be owner occupied in any way, shape, or form if it's a 1 to 4 unit investment property. Has to purely be investment, whether it's going to be a fix and flip or it's rented out with tenants, and we have copies of all those leases to show our borrower doesn't live there. Or obviously it could be a pure commercial property, a strip center or a retail shopping center, a warehouse. It could be a doctor's office, which is owner-occupied, but it's commercial. It's a commercial owner-occupied. It could be a self-storage facility, which is also owner-occupied if our borrower runs their business out of there, but it's a pure commercial property. It's not residential owner-occupied. So that is the difference. Anything commercial we can do, whether it's investment or the borrower runs their business out of there, 1 to 4 units, there's that fine line. If they live in one of the units, that's a residential loan. We're not licensed to do residential loans here, so stay away from that. But if you need some residential referrals, write into the loans email. We have about 5 of them we can send over to you. But anything 1 to 4 unit, just investment, purely investment, we can certainly do. So people, when they come into what we call the secondary market, and that's just kind of termed lenders that are not banks, not a PNC, not a Wells Fargo. So the secondary market is really the lenders we deal with, lenders that are not these big standard banks that everyone's aware of. People tend to think, since they are not dealing with a bank per se, as they know it, where they can just walk into the bank, that they are able to make the lending rules. They're going to make the requirements. They're going to submit whatever paperwork they want. They're going to move at their pace. They're going to do everything on their own time schedule. And I don't know why, but it is a stigma in the business that if I'm not dealing with a bank, I'm going to do it my way. And so, again, the education has to come back in. Just because you're dealing with a lender that is not a bank does not in any way, shape, or form mean they do not have their underwriting requirements, and they don't have all kinds of requirements about how they work and operate. And you must follow them still, or the lender's not going to fund your loan. So, of course, we always present that in a very, very nice and positive manner to all of our clients. But the secondary market lenders out there that are not banks, still have rules and requirements. They still have paperwork that they must have, and the borrower has to comply or the lender's not going to fund the loan. One more point. In any lending transaction that goes down, the borrower really, their mortgage broker should be they're everything. That person's walking them through the transaction. That person, that mortgage broker has to know what they're doing. This is kind of a scary business because in commercial, you can get in this business without, with not, you know, not much licensing, not, it doesn't take a lot of money to get into this business. So that's why the commercial lending space is so convoluted, because you have so many people that jump into this space that have absolutely no idea what they're doing. Lenders do not require any training. There's no schooling required to be a commercial mortgage broker. There is if you're residential, but that's a whole different world. So you will find borrowers out there that have just been steered so wrong by a mortgage broker, because that broker really didn't know what they were doing and, you know, thought they could jump in this and just figure it out quickly and make some money real quick. And this person's financial real estate transaction fell apart, and you can really put someone in a bad space. But if the borrower is dealing with a good, knowledgeable broker, which obviously if they're dealing with us, we know exactly what we're doing, that borrower should be listening to their mortgage broker on how that lender works. I have been involved in multiple transactions with borrowers, and some states throughout the United States are attorney states, meaning the attorney handles the closing. They do work in conjunction with the title company, but a lot of times, sometimes the borrower will gravitate to try to listen to their attorney on how things should work during the loan process when that attorney has never even closed with this lender or heard of them, and that's the wrong thing to do. And you have to kind of get, you know, call your borrower and have a little heart-to-heart with them that, you know, look, I understand they're saying this and this, but we've closed with this lender a dozen times. We know how they work. A lot of getting loans closed, and we're going to get into it, is honestly submitting the paperwork to the lender the way they want to see it. And if on this certain page they really, really want to make sure this line is double filled out, that's what the borrower has to do. That's what we have to tell them, and then that's our value add in the transaction, that we know what this lender wants to see, And that's not something attorneys know. Attorneys know how to conduct closings, and meaning when a lender sends them the closing instructions, they know how to put a settlement statement or a HUD together, and they should know how to facilitate the money coming in or wiring out and stuff like that. But they can't actually explain to the borrower how this lender works to get their loan closed. We can. We're the mortgage broker. We know how to work with the lender. So be careful where your borrower is getting the direction from. It should always be coming from you, the mortgage broker. It should not be coming from a closing attorney. They're a closing attorney. So when a closing is scheduled, then the direction should be coming from them, not prior. So we're going to get into it. Again, training is called The Customer is Wrong. Again, not in any way saying in a rude way. It's just saying that we have to constantly educate our borrowers every single day here, and I wanted to share a lot of the stuff that we do with you guys so you understand when people in this business come at you over certain things or maybe even present themselves a little unprofessional, get flustered, this is actually what's going on, and that's going to happen. I actually have a nickname for this business. I call this business the most unprofessional professional business ever for a couple of reasons. Again, anyone can really get into it. That's kind of a scary thing if you think about it. You know, someone who has no schooling, no training, no business background, no college degree can just jump into this business. I think that's great also in a sense because there's some extremely motivated people out there that will figure this business out. But I also think in a sense that's really scary because you have no idea as a borrower who you're dealing with on the other side of the phone. They might just be a good salesperson. It doesn't mean that they know how to actually get your mortgage done and walk you through the process. But that's a nickname I have for this business. It's the most unprofessional, professional business ever. That's one reason. Another reason is just throughout the loan process, you could take, you know, a priest and be doing their loan. And it's just when it comes to real estate transactions, some people just lose their minds. They're not, there's a lot of back and forth. They're not built for it. They don't understand it. Throughout the process, people become heated. It's just this kind of business. So just get used to it. Don't let it bother you. That's what you have your internal team here to do for you. Just be happy that all you got to do is just go get some intake information from them. That's it. You don't have to be on the phone with anyone late at night explaining closing costs, and all kinds of crazy stuff and convincing them that this is the best deal they're going to get out, you know, in the marketplace. They need to come to closing tomorrow. Don't worry about that. We take care of all that. So we're going to get right into this. Most people get upset in this business because, again, they get confused. They don't understand all the third parties that are involved in a real estate transaction, and they don't understand why they have to be involved in the real estate, in the transaction. And this, again, where we come in with the quarterbacking and dealing with all these people for them. If we didn't do that, the borrower would have to do that on their own. Lenders do not do that. The lender may ask you who are you using for property insurance and who are you using for title insurance. They may ask the borrower for that. They want to know. But they're not going to chase them down and get documents or call and explain anything to them. Good luck if you can get the lender on the phone with the title company or the insurance agent, you know, or even the attorney. If there's an attorney in a transaction or a realtor, there's no way a realtor would ever get them on the phone, really. Obviously, the lender has complete control over the appraisal and any other third-party reports, such as surveys or phase ones or any type of environmental or anything like that. They're the ones who order those on the borrower's behalf, and they pick those companies. But again, to go back to it, we have people that call into the office every single day, and again, they're upset and they're confused because they don't understand why they need title insurance. Why do I need title insurance? I already own this property. I already paid for a prior title policy. I just clearly don't understand. I think you're trying to scam me. So imagine if you're the person on the other end of the phone right now. So again, the customer is wrong, but we would never say that to them. We're educating them. We would just say, well, ma'am, sir, you need title insurance because I know you already own the property and you've owned it for some time, or maybe they haven't. But unless the lender knows that their mortgage to you is going to be first position, and the only way to prove that is with the title policy, because title insurance is a unique insurance where it actually insures you for the past, everything in the past that could have happened to that property, any lien, judgment, a delinquent water, sewer bill that's against that property, the only insurance that's like that. We have a really cool call about title insurance in the portal, so please go listen to it. Every other insurance out there insures you for what's going to happen in the future. That's not how title insurance works. But anyways, ma'am, sir, if we cannot prove to the lender that there is no other liens that are going to be in front of your lien, basically our lenders always want to be first position, and they really don't even want any of the liens behind them. But we have to prove to the lender, and everyone does, even on residential transactions, commercial, it doesn't matter. That lender needs proof that their mortgage is first position lien. If you don't prove that to the lender, they won't close. The only way to prove that is with a third-party title company that is going to do some research on your property. They are going to issue a title commitment stating there are no liens, and they are insuring this policy. So then, you know, again, we've explained it to the customer. They understand. They're okay for now. That is why you need title insurance. You need to prove to the lender that their lien is going to be first position. So on to the next point, other parties in the transaction that the borrower may not understand that can confuse them. Title insurance is typically the big one, but just so everyone knows, whenever it's a refinance transaction, we always recommend to them just go back to the title company you used initially for the purchase, because they already did the title policy, so you can probably get a discount. They already have the paperwork. So we always recommend them to do it that way. That is the biggest confusion on third parties. And I'm very sorry, but I have to do something. Okay. Another big one that people get confused about, I think sometimes, are just third parties. No one's really confused about an appraisal or why that's needed. I guess the biggest confusion that comes in with appraisals is a lot of times people ask, why can't they use their appraiser? It's just because of the mortgage fraud, everything that happened prior to 08. Lenders want to make sure they're using an appraiser that the borrower doesn't know. Third-party reports, surveyors, other people like that, environmentalists, those are usually always picked by the lender as well. And that is just to ensure, again, that they're getting the proper report. Any other third parties that I can think of? Attorneys. Okay. Sometimes people don't understand why attorneys need to be involved. And that's usually just because certain states require that closing is conducted by an attorney. New York's a big state like that. Illinois is a big state like that. Those are the two that always come up. I'll have to give everyone a list. There are other states that are like that, but sometimes when I can see that it is in a state that requires a closing attorney, I always let the borrower know right away. Just, you know, who are you planning to use for your closing? And again, sometimes they come back and they're upset that, you know, why do I need an attorney for the closing? It's just the rules of that state. Illinois and New York require that attorney conducts the closing. So, again, that's why the title of the training is called The Customer is Wrong. So that's really it for third parties. I think everyone else understands why there's realtors involved. Obviously, buyer, seller. Those are really the only things I can think of, so I'm going to move on to the next topic. I guess the biggest thing, too, just about the third parties, not only that all these people are involved in the transaction, but it's actually coordinating with these people as well, that a lot of times borrowers don't understand, or they're not exactly sure exactly what to ask them for, and that's okay. And that can certainly lead to frustration with all of our clients, but that's why we just get their contact information for the third parties, and we just do it for them. We just take over and get it done. There's certain documents I always need from the title company. We need a title commitment. We need proof of their E&O insurance. We need a CPL, which is a closing protection letter. We need their wiring instructions. Sometimes the lender wants an additional like tax document to prove the taxes and stuff on the property. So that's just always stuff that we work with the title company to get for them to get over to the lender. But again, if someone calls and they don't understand why this is needed, why that is needed. Another big thing is, you know, when files get to move forward, we always will send the insurance requirements that lender requires to the insurance agent, and we copy the borrower just to make sure that if they already own the property insurance they have on the property currently applies. Or if it doesn't apply, we were trying to let them know that it's going to have to be adjusted. And hopefully that does not raise the cost of the insurance, but it could. So we want to let them know that right away. Quoting. I have had, now everyone knows we get our intake form, and you just want to back up for a second. We always get one quote for them for free, at least. And a lot of times we'll get multiple quotes. What I can say is on the intake forms, if you know something by talking to someone, if you know this person's looking for the lowest interest rate possible, please like put that on there. Because one thing I can say about quoting, and it is an art, the borrower is not going to get every single thing they want. They're just not. There's not one lender out there that is going to give them every single thing they want about their deal. So if it's a refinance or even if it's a purchase, everyone wants the highest LTV possible. They want the lowest interest rate possible. They want the lowest closing cost possible. They want the least amount of time to close possible. I get it. Everybody wants everything. That's human nature. We always want the best, but that's not possible. That's not how this business works. I have never, ever, ever, out of all the hundreds of real estate transactions I've been involved in and closed, I have never given a borrower a quote where they liked every single thing about the quote. I've never done that. But what we do here is we offer options, and that's why we have a very, very, very extensive product sheet and a very extensive lender database. So what I always do is I give someone one quote or anyone on the intake team, we give them one quote, but then we offer them options. Hey, this lender has a really, really great interest rate, but closing costs are high. LTV is pretty decent. You know, probably with them, though, it's going to be a 60-day close. You know, well, if the borrower does not like something about the quote, I just pull right up the product sheet and I just let them know. Number 15, I can get the closing time down for you if that's what you're interested in. But, you know, their interest rate's a little higher. You know, we can go back and forth on this every day because we know what all the lenders on our product sheet do, and there's a bunch of other lenders we don't even have on our product sheet that we can go back and forth with them on too. But quoting is something that does confuse people. You know, because again, they want everything, and people do call into the office, and I've had people call me directly, like very, very angry at the quote I just sent them. You know, and again, it's just a free quote. We're trying to help them out. But just one example real quick, and I'll move on to the next point. We had a lady call into our office last year, and she was yelling and screaming. She was very, very mad, and it was a permanent rental program. And on the quote, it went over the prepayment penalty of what would happen if she paid it off prior to the fixed period. Most of the prepayment penalties and all the rental programs we offer are just for the fixed period. She was very mad. She was screaming at everyone. She said her husband was a judge. She was going to report us to them. And we are scamming people because there's a prepayment penalty on our loans. And I thank God did not take the call, because I would have surely educated her, because she's 100% wrong. In commercial, on rental programs, if anyone takes 10 minutes to look at the rental section of our product sheet, every single one of those programs comes with a prepayment penalty. We're not the lenders. We don't create these programs. They're already created, and they will remain the same whether 11 Capital exists or not. That's still how they would be. For the 1-4 units, for the pure commercial properties, take a look at our permanent section of our product sheet. All of those programs come with prepayment penalties. That is how commercial lenders do it. Well, I'm not just making this up. This is how commercial lenders do it. There's always a prepayment penalty for usually during the fixed period of the loan. A very common one out there is 5% for 5 years, and it's usually a step down, 5-4-3-2-1, meaning in year one, if the loan amount was, total loan amount was $100,000, if they pay off the loan in year one, they owe the lender 5% of the loan amount at that time if they paid off in year one. Year two, 4% of the loan amount at that time. Year three, 3% of the loan amount at that time, and it steps down. After year five, they could pay the loan off whenever they want, and there's no prepayment penalty. But she was very, very angry about the prepayment penalty, and when the office lady came to me very upset, I explained to her, this is how commercial works. Now, she might be confused because it was a 1-4 unit investment property quote we gave her. And of course, you are able to obtain a residential mortgage on 1-4 unit investment properties as well. So in the residential world, I'm not a residential expert, I don't believe there are prepayment penalties if you get a residential loan. But if you want to get a residential loan, then you have to jump through the residential hoops. It's a whole entire different world. Usually tax returns, all that 9 yards are, you know, required. So people are going to come at you in this business, and they're going to be very loud and sometimes very upset. And again, this is the most unprofessional professional business ever. It just is. Just keep in mind, when someone comes at you, your instant response is to be a customer service person and to agree with them. And I get it. I get it, because that's what I did when I started the business, and we're all taught the customer is right. But a lot of times that person is just confused, and they're 100% wrong. They don't know what they're talking about. And that's okay. Back to point number one, our job is to educate them. So anyways, we did send that lady a very nice email. We did explain to her, no, we are not scamming anybody. This is how the programs out there work in commercial lending. Now, in residential lending, there are no prepayment penalties. So that's probably what you're referring to. But if you want a commercial/investment loan that's closing in an entity name, this is how they work. That being said, there are bank loans out there, and there are credit union commercial loans out there that do not have prepayment penalties on them. We don't specialize in bank loans. Banks and credit unions are kind of the same thing the way I view them. They analyze loans the same way. We don't do a lot of banking and credit union loans here. We have in the past. But still, there's still a lot of banks out there on their commercial programs that have prepayment penalties. We just did a lender call a couple weeks ago, a Celtic Bank, and they certainly have a prepayment penalty on their loans. And I've done bank loans with banks that have had prepayment penalties, and then maybe the next month their promotion was, oh, we're not doing a prepayment penalty this month. But in commercial, the point is there's always a prepayment penalty on the permanent rental loans. There always is. 98% of the time there always is. Now, if they don't want a prepayment penalty, go over the temporary financing side. You could do that, that's high interest rate, high point side, interest only. So you're not paying down any principal. Usually a 12-month term. There's no prepayment there, but that's not as good as rates and terms. So that kind of fits into the quoting. We can basically do anything for anyone that they want. They just have to understand where they fit into the marketplace. And the point of that bullet point is they're not going to get everything they want. They're not, because they're not an expert on the business and they don't understand really where they fit in. And again, sometimes people think when they come to the secondary market, I think sometimes they think they're dealing with like a private investor or someone on the street or something. That's not who we work with. We work with legitimate lending companies that are funded. A lot of them are funded by private money, but that company itself has their own internal requirements, underwriters, all kinds of people that are there to make sure everything is perfect with that loan before it ever closes. So we went over the prepayment penalty example. Another thing I wanted to go over real quick, and I'm going to try to wrap this up so we can get to questions, is, you know, people just don't understand the loan process in general. And we have another training call on that, so take it when you get a chance. I believe it's called the loan process. It's called the CRE lending process. CRE stands for commercial real estate lending process. People just don't understand when to jump, when to do this, when to do that, when to act, you know, when to engage an insurance agent, when to engage a title company. Again, that's okay. We do that for them. We know all those things. We know when if someone's not responsive after a time or I'm not getting what I need from them, my first call is to the borrower saying, this person should have already gotten me what I need, this third party over here. If they can't get it to me in the next 24 hours, we need to pick someone else. Okay, because we need to get this deal done with them or without them. We're not going to let them hold up the deal. So another one thing I want to mention about the process is that I guess the biggest misconception about this business is that borrowers just think, and this is something none of you have to share with your borrowers, but I want you to know because it will come up throughout the process. People just think as they're sending their loan documents into a lender, that everything that they have sent in is approved. Like every single document is perfect and there's nothing wrong with it. That's not the truth. Lenders specifically train their processors to not go through a whole entire file until they have a certain amount of documents. So if they want them to have 10 documents, and then the processor can go through it and rip it up and say, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. A lot of times that comes as a huge shock to the borrower. They're like, well, I sent you this thing all this 2 weeks ago, but they didn't send that 10th document the processor needed until yesterday, and that's why the processor is recapping today. But in a borrower's mind, I've been sending you this stuff for 2 weeks, and you're now just telling me that, you know, my operating agreement's not correct, or you're now just telling me that I need a certificate of good standing. This happens all the time, and this is where 11 Capital fills that void. We have our own processors here. We understand the paperwork. One thing I can't 100% consult someone on is their entity documents. I'm not a lawyer. I always tell people that. I do know how the lenders want to see them. And I do explain to people on email and over the phone how the lenders do want to see them. But if the borrower is not able to do that, I can't do that for them or offer any advice to do that. They have to then go consult an attorney. But I can tell you the major thing people get tripped up in terms of paperwork, just certain pages they just like don't even sign on a loan application or they don't date, like really silly things. Other like maybe a personal financial statement needs to be signed or a 1003 or something. Entity documents are typically a big thing. On a lot of operating agreements or bylaws that we see, every single one of our lenders wants it to be fully signed by all parties of the company, and they also want the percentage everyone owns in the company to be notated on one page of the operating agreement or the bylaws. And I can't tell you how many times people send in operating agreements and bylaws and it's not signed at all. It doesn't state all the members of the company and their ownership percentage. And we let people know nicely, hey, it has to state this because I've already been down this road dozens of times. Underwriting is going to come back. And they might not even tell us until 2 days before the loan is going to close that it needs this. let's get this fixed now because we already know this is going to be a problem so we can have a smooth closing. And people fight us on that all the time with that operating agreement and bylaws saying, well, why does it need that? The state doesn't require that. I shouldn't have to be required to add that section to my operating agreement. You would think that, like, you're trying to start a war here sometimes when you're not. And I just let them know this is another thing where the borrower is wrong, where they come back. The state does not require that. It doesn't matter. That's not what I'm telling you. I'm not telling you the state requires it. I'm telling you the lender requires it to close. I'm trying to help you. Please do it so we can get your loan done. Another big document that people get tripped on is a certificate of good standing. You know, when I first started this business in 2011, no lender ever asked me for a certificate of good standing. I don't know why, but they didn't. But now every lender I run into does. They all want a certificate of good standing. And basically, it's just a document. You have to go to your state's website, whatever state your entity was formed in. Some states call it a certificate of good standing. Some states call it some states it's just like an active document. I'm trying to think of other ones I see. There's another name that comes up too. In most states, it's literally called a certificate of good standing, and that's literally what it says on the top of the document, or it says somewhere in the one page of the document, a certificate of good standing. But you do have to special order it from the state. It's like from $30 to $50 per state. And it does take some time to get, so we always let our people know up front, please, this lender requires us to start working on this now, because they're not going to close without it. And if it takes you 5 days or a week to get it back from the state, you want to start on that now, especially if you have to close quick. Those are the biggest ones people really get tripped up on. I mean, on 1003s, a lot of time people don't put their socials, or they don't put their home addresses, or if they're married or not. That's always a big thing. What other things? Bank statements. Bank statements are a big thing. All of our lenders actually want real bank statements that are printed out and downloaded, and they want to see the account numbers. I can't tell you how many times people send us bank statements and they white out the account numbers, and I've sent them into the lender several times. They're like, denied, fraud. The lender thinks that like some type of fraud is someone's trying to do some type of fraud, and I'm just like, no, they just don't feel comfortable putting their account number on there, and the lender's like, we don't care. This is how we need to see it. And for some reason for them, that's a sign of fraud. I don't know why. But I had really, really gotten into it sometimes with this whole bank statement thing and the account numbers being whited out. And all I can tell everyone on the phone is that lenders don't want to see that. They want to see the whole entire statement, every single page of the statement, even the blank page, everything. And also they want to see who owns that account. So you can't white out, you know, at the top of the account should be either the entity's name or the borrower's name or the trust name, whoever the account owner is, that cannot be whited out either. So a lot of people, again, will call in, you don't need this, that doesn't apply to me. And again, we just have to educate them. We never would say, oh, you're wrong. We just have to educate them and say, ma'am, sir, I understand where you're coming from, and that's the first way I always start off the call. I understand where you're coming from, but this is how the lender wants it. This is what the lender requires. We know we've closed them several times. We know how to get this done. If you can just please get this to me, I can push this loan forward. Paperwork becomes a big thing where people just think, I don't know why people think that those things don't apply to them, because we always give them the document list before they even sign a fee agreement with us, so they understand what that lender requires, but for some reason they just think it doesn't apply to them. I don't know. So let's move on. We kind of already talked about third parties and who does what, but I can tell you, borrowers, before every single closing, I always let them know, we quote people multiple times throughout the loan process. They have a quote when they first come in based off our intake form. Again, we did not verify any of that information. Then their credit is ran, and we supply them with a new quote. Now that your mid-FICO score is this, here's how the terms change a little bit. Then their appraisal happens, if you know, obviously if they're okay with the second quote. Their appraisal happens, then they get a third quote. This is how your quote has changed now due to your mid-FICO score, where it is actually, and where the property actually appraised. At that time, the quote's pretty much final, but we do have some lenders that do have rehab review departments. If it's a rehab deal or a construction department, they want to go through all the rehab and construction Because sometimes they will redo the borrower's budget. They will add more money to it sometimes. Most of the time they're just adding more money to it. They think the things are going to cost more than the borrower feels they're going to cost. So sometimes that could just up the loan amount a little bit because they actually want to give the borrower extra money for construction just in case they need it. So then since your closing costs are based off the overall loan amount, that can slightly change. But people will ask me all the time, and any of our processors / closers here, you know, oh, how much money do I need for closing? How much money do I need for closing? Oh, I need the final HUD one. I need the final HUD one. And that comes from the closing attorney or the title company. We always break down all fees associated with the loan from the bar from day one and multiple times throughout the process. But any type of final HUD or settlement statement always comes from the closing attorney or the title company. It doesn't come from us. So just another thing showing you that people don't really understand who does what in the transaction. And that's okay because we're here to educate. One thing I just want to say real quick, and we're going to move on, is on our quotes, we break down all the loan fees, the lender's points, our points, obviously the LTV associated with the transaction, lender's closing fee, but we always do put an estimate in there for property insurance and title insurance. We put an estimate in there. Next to the estimate, we always say, please check with your local insurance agent. Please check with your local title agent, because we don't know exactly what those things are going to cost. None of us here, well, I'm not an insurance agent, and I'm not a title professional either. I don't know what the recording fees are in each state. It's not trying to pass the buck, but that's not my job. You know, I'm still providing a quote that goes over that, because most commercial mortgage companies would never even include those in a quote because they don't want to get into that with a borrower and go back and forth on why do I need insurance and why do I need title insurance. We do here, and we go over quotes extensively with people, and I just want everyone to know that, you know, that we go over this stuff extensively with people. And I had a borrower actually email me the other day saying they weren't moving forward because they felt that we didn't go over the quotes with them and we didn't explain everything. And it was just a total lie. We went over the quote with him on both lenders 5 different times, both of us. And basically he just couldn't move forward because he didn't have enough money to do the deal. But the rep on the transaction really took the borrower's position and really agreed with them. And we just let them know, you know, if you check the CRM or all the emails that you've been copied on, we went over the quotes with him on the phone and via email literally 10 different times. And we had to get different lenders involved because he said he had a certain amount of cash and then he didn't. We had to re-quote. So I just want everyone to know, if someone ever says that, that is 100% a lie. It's 100% a lie. The customer there is dead wrong. There is no one here that quotes that does not know how to quote, that does not know to go over certain things a million times. And we actually have a training call on quoting and how we quote as well. So if you get a chance, take that. I think that's in our continued education in Teachable. But we go over all that. It's also in the commercial real estate lending process. It's in that training as well. So appraisals. Appraisals really do confuse people as well. A lot of people don't understand that there's a huge difference between a 1-4 unit investment property appraisal and then pure commercial. And it's a whole different appraiser. And again, I've had people call in very upset that, well, on your product sheet, it said the appraisals for this were around $500 to $600. And we have to explain, yes, but that program is for a 1-4 unit investment program, ma'am or sir. You know, that nowhere in that program that you're looking at, because I'll actually ask them, what number are you looking at on the product sheet? Because I know the product sheet. I made it, and I know it very well. So I go to that number, and I will just say, you know, yeah, that program does not allow commercial properties. I know you're looking at that program, but that's not even the lender we're taking your loan to, because we're doing a loan on a self-storage facility. That lender doesn't do pure commercial. They only do 1-4. So anyways, the point is on 1-4 units, appraisal costs are very, very minimal. I won't say minimal, but they're nowhere near commercial costs. You know, residential 1-4 units typically start, you know, somewhere around $600. Then as you get, you know, to a 2 unit, probably looking at like $650, $700, 3 unit, $700. 700, 800 for a unit, you're probably looking 750 to 800. Appraisal fees have gone up these days, and that is because a lot of lenders now are using appraisal management companies. So it's a third party that locates the appraiser for them, tries to find someone for the best price and the best turnaround time, and stays on that appraiser to submit the report. Lenders, you know, a lot, we do still do work with some lenders that do try to manage appraisers by themselves. But that is like it's sometimes very, very inefficient because the lender has so many things to do and so many different departments and third parties to coordinate with. And a lot of them just like drop that ball totally on coordinating with the appraiser. And I've been involved in files where like the lender just hasn't followed up with the appraiser in like weeks. And at that point we step in, I'm like, can I call the appraiser just so someone can call them? Typically brokers are not supposed to be talking to appraisers, but someone needs to get an update from this person because we have to close this deal. So people don't understand, you know, 1 to 4 units, that's what they cost. If you're dealing with anything pure commercial, I've been involved in commercial transactions where a mixed-use appraisal on a very large property was $6,000. It was a very large property. That's a very, very hefty appraisal fee. I've been involved in transactions where, you know, a 5-unit was only $1,500. Which is still a very hefty fee. It's still much more than a 1 to 4 unit, but it's not $6,000. You know, and you can't always quote someone on appraisal cost. People will ask you that. How much is the appraisal going to cost? I always give people a range, and you can give people a range. You know, residential appraisals from 1 to 4 units typically start at $600, and they go up depending on how many units. Commercial appraisals typically, I always tell people, depending on the property size, many of them are around $3,000. Many of them are, give or take. But it really depends your area, how many commercial appraisers are available, how accessible your property is. Is it in the middle of nowhere, or is it, you know, more in the city where there's more commercial appraisers? You know, how large the facility is, how long, you know, it's going to take them to get this complete. It really depends. But in general, those are the ranges. And a lot of times people don't understand that. I can tell you people call in a lot saying, well, on your sheet it says, like I just said, $600 is the range. And I'm like, yeah, but that's not your property. They didn't look at anything else on the sheet, basically. As you can see, our product sheet's very detailed, and it lists all the property types that lender allows. They missed that part, but they went to the appraisal cost. So just be careful. When people are looking at that product sheet, I know it is very detailed, and I'm sorry. We're trying to give everyone everything we can possibly give them. But make sure they look at the whole program. That is the number one thing, too, that people call in and confuse. They're just not even looking at the whole program. A lot of times they call in, they're asking, and it's literally right on the product. It's right on that program. It answers their question. But, again, we're just here to educate and reiterate. Another thing that is a huge problem on a lot of ground-up construction loans and rehab loans and is people changing their plans throughout the process. So whenever someone's doing a rehab loan here, a ground-up construction loan here, and we have their plans, maybe they send in some permits. If they need architectural drawings, we have those. For just a regular fix and flip of 1 to 4 unit, really, we just need a rehab budget, unless they're doing something very extensive to the property, like adding square footage, or they're moving the stairs from one side of the house to the other side of the house, which we have a rehab deal going on like that now. Then they're going to need some architectural drawings, and an actual architect needs to sign off on that because that's something crazy. That's just more extensive than you're just cosmetically lifting the house. But anyways, before any type of appraisal is ordered, ground-up and rehab appraisals are based on what this person is doing to the property. So this is the blueprint. Like, if you change anything about this, the after-repair value is going to change. It's just like input-output like a computer. If you change anything about these plans that you're giving me now and allowing me to order your appraisal, we're going to have to order another appraisal if you go and change the plans. And I just want everyone in this zone to know, before any rehab or ground-up construction loan is done, we call the par and we tell them that. And literally, I over-harp on it, too. I just let them know, like, you swear that you're not going to change these plans. I mean, that's okay if you're going to, but be advised. You're going to have to pay for another appraisal if you change these plans in any way. Because if you decide to use all different finishings or all different, now the ARV could go up. It might be different. I don't know. You decided to take something out, the ARV could go down. So it's cause and effect. we again, even though we reiterate things to people all the time in this business, people are still going to get upset. That's just how people are, you know? And a lot of times people get upset at their own decisions they've made. We are very big here in giving people options. I always give people options, especially if something on the file I see is, you know, has not panned out well, which is typically just the appraisal. We have options. You know, we can try to order another appraisal. We can go to a different appraisal management company and just totally shift that way. We can try to just refi cash out on another property you have here so you can take that cash and get it over here to use this rehab deal since on the appraiser specifically said there's no comps, you know? So we always give people options, but they have to pick the option. We don't pick the option for them. They have to tell us what path to go down, and then we go down that path. And if they're not happy with the results of that path, you know, they told us to go down that path. But that's what happens a lot with construction plans. So most of the times when people do change their construction plans, and it's happening a lot on a couple of deals we have right now, they're very aware that they have to pay for another appraisal. And most people are not upset with us because we went over it like 10 times. But sometimes people are, or even though we've told them that, you know, you did change your construction plans and we gave them to the appraisal management company who gave them to the appraiser, they are requiring an appraisal, you know, basically, you know, even though we told them, sometimes they're still upset. It just depends on the person. One other thing, stalling. And I don't want to say this is where the customer is wrong, but it's another cause and effect thing. In general, and every borrower out there will ask you, how quickly can you close? How quickly can you close? And your response back to them should be, how quickly can you get me your paperwork and the contact information I need for everyone I have to reach out to on your deal? We do have a PowerPoint that goes over the different closing times for every single different deal. So check that out when you get a chance, and it goes over rates and terms for every single different deal. And also, so does our product sheet. Our product sheet has a little section that says closing time frame for every single different program. But stalling is another thing that happens all the time where, again, I'm not saying the customer's wrong, but what happens is people stall and getting paperwork in sometimes, and all of a sudden they'll get you something. Great, you go through it, you organize it, you get it to the lender as quickly as you can, and then the lender stalls you because the lender is in their head. They're like, well, we're going to pay attention to the files that are actually coming in steadily, that are moving forward. And I'm telling you, I don't want to say lenders do it on purpose, but it happens all the time. If the borrower stalls the lender, that loan file starts becoming less and less and less and less and less important, to the point where sometimes it is so hard to get it going back again with the lender, because they just felt like, well, it took them 2 weeks to get us something really simple. This is going nowhere, and we're not collecting any upfront retainer to work on this. Why are we working on this? You know, nobody in this business gets paid up front besides the appraiser. That's the only person that gets paid up front to do the appraisal. So, again, not saying the customer is wrong, but a lot of times people do call in and they're upset that the file is going nowhere, but it took them 2 weeks to get us like two documents we needed, you know, two bank statements or something that we needed to finally get this going. And, you know, if they could have got to us quicker, we could have got the file going quicker. So any of us always let the borrower know the quicker you can get these things to us and we can keep a good pace here of doc coming in and us getting stuff to the lender and organizing it, the quicker we can get this done. If now things come up in people's lives now, and that's totally understood, but that has to be communicated so we can communicate it to the lender so they know that we're no one's just stalling them. But anyway, that's the point. The quicker we can get the stuff in, the quicker the lender is going to work on it to get it closed, and that's every lender. It doesn't matter if it's a permanent financing lender, ground up, rehab, bridge, whatever. They all work the same way. That's really the main reasons why people call in and are upset. And again, the title is the customer is wrong. Not saying they are wrong, but you know, they kind of are. But our job here is we have to educate them and explain these things. And this is the business we're in. We're always explaining. So just please keep in mind for everyone on the phone, when you have a file that's moving forward, and maybe someone who's processing or you know, comes back and tells the borrower something or how the lender really likes to see this, and it's just out of the kindness of their heart because they want the file to move forward, and we make money by closing loans here, not by not closing loans. If they come back and they're mad or they even call you, don't get upset. What we need to do is just say, just please keep this train in the back of your head that your natural reaction is to agree with them, because that's the natural thing to do and that is the customer thing to do, agree with them. But don't come and blast anyone over here. Just check in with us and say, this is what they're telling me. And I bet you 99% of the time, 99.9% of the time, I bet you we have an explanation for you where what we're trying to tell them is the right thing. They're just not understanding. So anyways, I know we went over. I'm sorry. I have to make these training calls a lot quicker, but I'm going to unmute and see if anyone has any questions. All right. Everyone's unmuted. Does anyone have any questions about our training today?
I have a question.
Go ahead. Go ahead. You know what? I'm so sorry. I have to find a much better format for the whole question thing. But go ahead.
I apologize. It's stupid, but what is our commission or whatever we are paid for our work? I don't know.
Oh, no, no big deal. So we charge a fee to broker loans for our customers, and obviously to do all this coordinating for them, not only to just place their file, but we're full set. A lot of brokers just place the file with the lender, and then the borrower is on their own to deal with them direct. We stay involved in the file and coordinate with people, make sure it gets closed. So anyways, we charge a fee for that. We get that fee agreement with them up front, and then when it closes, typically the processor is paid $250 for processing, which comes off the top to the processor, and then 50-50 is split between you and 11 Capital Finance.
Okay, thank you.
It just depends. It depends because, you know, sometimes we do our fees by points. Every file is priced differently depending on how many options that borrower has in the marketplace, how quickly we have to move. You know, that everything is priced a little different, and different types of deals are priced differently as well.
Okay, thank you.
Whatever that fee ends up becoming at close, the processor gets paid $250, and then it's split 50-50 between 11 Capital Finance and the IAP. IAP.
Yes.
Did you have any other questions?
No.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Does anyone else have any other questions at all? All right, ladies, gentlemen, thank you so much for being on the call. We actually have like a really, really good turnout, so this is really cool. I'm surprised. I will send out a copy of the call to everyone, so everyone has it. And again, just wanted to reiterate, I know that the topic or the title of the training call is called The Customer is Wrong. That was just a marketing gimmick to get you guys on the phone. I'm not
wow,
the customer.
It worked.
I know. I had to do something exciting to try to get more people to come to the training call. But wanted to do is just show you why people do call in and are upset. And it's really just typically upset. They're upset about something they don't understand. And that's okay. Our job here is to educate them and to walk them through the process, and that's what we do. Just keep in mind, if someone comes to you upset about something, it's pretty much just because it's not because anyone here has done wrong. It's just because done something wrong. Sorry. It's just because they don't understand what is happening, and that's okay. It is our job here to explain to them what's going on. So, again, everyone, thank you so much for being on, and I will send this out to everyone. Everyone have a nice day.
Thank you.